Welcome to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Decker. This podcast is dedicated to providing my books in full, unabridged audio format. Look for new episodes every Tuesday. Now, on with the show. Black Brick by Dan Decker. Hello, and welcome back to the podcast. We are continuing to read the novel Black Brick. Last week we read, "Sorry, It Sucks to Be You" did not seem adequate, and I did not want to give the man hope that I could somehow free him. Jake Ramsey was officially dead, and would be able to do nothing for this man. That had been part of the deal when Beltran had recruited me. "Made a mistake," I said. "Thought you were somebody else." I stood and tried to avoid looking back into the man's eyes. I felt bad for this innocent man serving a life sentence with no hope of exoneration. I wished I could do something for him, but at the moment I had too many other problems to deal with. An hour later, I was on the train and almost to my stop when Beltran called. When I answered, I had a hard time paying attention as he told me that Martinez had been spotted by the surveillance team we kept on Vargo. He ordered me back to Black Brick so we could prepare to capture Martinez when he came out of the new Digon headquarters. I found myself telling him I was 10 minutes away before hanging up. 25. Shannon was in the driver's seat of our Dodge Charger, and I sat on the passenger side. I was not certain, but I suspected that Beltran had a thing for this type of car because Black Brick had a fleet of the Chargers. After our botched rescued attempt the other day when we abandoned the Charger, he had almost been more concerned about the loss of the Charger than the fact that we'd spent all day evading the police. I had my rifle, the F-2000, on my lap, and it was covered with my jacket. It was not my favorite weapon, but the bullpup design made it easier to work with in many of the situations we encountered. We had already been waiting for close to an hour, during which time Shannon and I had barely spoken. After trying several times to start a conversation, I had given up and resigned myself to the awkward silence. I missed the way that Shannon had been before the kidnapping. I should have been able to talk to her about the fact that the wrong man was in jail for killing my parents, but I did not know that I could trust her anymore because she had changed. Shaking my head, I surveyed the area. We were parked on a road that ran parallel to Digon's new headquarters. Cherry and Tom were several cars ahead of us. The space between us and the new building was nothing short of ostentatious. There were flower gardens, art exhibits, and a large amphitheater. My eyes stopped on the zoo. While the zoo had its own place beside the tower, there were several impressive wildlife exhibits that led up to the massive complex. The closest to us featured grizzly bears in a sprawling habitat. I doubted most captive grizzly bears had it so lucky. From here, although our heavily tinted windows made it hard to get a good view of them, I could make out several of the bears moving around. It had warmed up in the last few days, and I wondered how recently the bears had come out of hibernation. I looked past the habitat and beyond the wide expanse of gardens to the tower rising into the sky. It was my first time getting this close to the new Digon building. I'd seen it go up from a distance while the construction had been underway because it was impossible to miss the building as it towered over most of the others in the city, but I had never bothered to get closer. Martinez was inside the Digon headquarters and apparently already causing a scene because people in yellow jackets, Digon security, were milling around the entrance and had the place on lockdown. Originally, our orders had been to go in after Martinez, but we had arrived too late and were now watching from a distance. There was a flurry of activity near the entrance, and several Humvees arrived with more armed guards. Even though there weren't any roads close to the front of the building, the sidewalks were wide enough to function as such. Digon was quickly amassing a small army outside. Had Martinez gone suicidal? If he had, then nothing we did here would make a difference, and I'd have a better and safer view of it from a couch once the media caught wind of this. I looked at my watch and I sighed. I did not really know what Beltran expected us to do. Whatever was happening inside, the Digon security force had a lot more firepower than we did. There weren't any police on the scene yet, but that would not last for long. If they showed up, we would need to get out of the way quickly in case some of the officers recognized us. "I want Martinez and Payne dead." It was the first Shannon had spoken since we had arrived here. "So kill them," I said. "Cherry will probably help with Martinez if you ask." There had been a change in Cherry since the mall bombing. She had barely been able to veil her struggle with her feelings for Martinez before. Now there was a quiet rage to her. I hoped for her sake that it would pass soon. Shannon turned to look at me, catching me off guard. For most of the trip, she had been doing her best to pretend I did not exist. By the expression on her face, I could tell that she was going what she was going to say next. I had already been preparing for the conversation, if not the timing of it. Like the feeling I sometimes got just before vomiting, I knew that the moment had come. "Jake," she said, "we are through." I figured. It still felt like a double punch to the gut. "This does not have anything to do with what happened to me," she said. "I was planning to end it anyway, before all this happened. Besides, it's not like there really is much to end. We had several nights together, that's all." Shannon looked away and her face went pale. "You suck at timing," I said. I did not like the way she characterized our relationship. It had been much more than just a few nights. "I make no apology," she said. I looked away. Even though I had been expecting this, the moment took on a surreal effect. Shannon was breaking up with me in a situation where we might end up depending on each other for our lives. "Let's talk about this later," I said. "We won't," she said. "I'm going to tell Beltran about our relationship and request a new partner." "You don't think he already knows?" I asked. "Did you tell him?" she asked. I shook my head. I kind of wonder if Beltran was trying to get us to fall for each other. Almost everything he has done pushed us towards one another. It hasn't only worked on us. Shannon snorted, her whole body tensed. "Are you saying we should stay together because Beltran wants us to be together?" "No," I said. "I accept the breakup. What I'm pointing out is, it's clear that you haven't accepted anything." "Things are complicated," I said. "Only because you choose to make them that way." I shut up. I couldn't help but feel like one of the final things that had been keeping me from leaving this job had dropped away. I should have been angry, but I was not. I was relieved. Once Martinez and Payne were neutralized, and I had done my part to clean up this mess, I would quit. It would not matter then whether I worked for the government or not. "There he is," Cherry's voice crackled over the radio. "He really wants to be found, doesn't he?" I was shocked to see Martinez out in the open. He was pushing Lane Vargo in front of him with a pistol to Vargo's head. If this didn't have "Come find me" written all over it, I didn't know what did. I couldn't decide if Martinez was arrogant or if he really did have a death wish. Martinez had appeared out of nowhere and was heading towards the street where we were parked. There must have been an exit somewhere nearby to allow him to escape the security guards. The closest landmark to Martinez was a small building by the Grizzly Bear exhibit. I was surprised that the Diagon security team hadn't locked it down as well. Even though he moved as if he had all the time in the world, it would not be long before the Diagon security team picked up on this. I looked at the security team members outside the building. None of them appeared to be looking our way at the moment, but I was not about to pull out binoculars to get a better look. I did not want to do anything that would call attention to us. It would look bad if we were discovered with the rifle I had on my lap. Vargo was wearing a suit with a bright red tie and was bleeding from the side of his head. It was the first I'd seen of him since the night we'd been tasked with giving him protection at the restaurant. Since that time, I'd made a regular habit of reviewing the logs our surveillance team had been making, but there had never been another indication of anything tying him to Jason Kurt, Payne, or even Martinez. I was uncertain about what to do, and could tell that Shannon had the same dilemma. Martinez was likely to be noticed at any moment, and we didn't want to get caught in the middle. If he was able to get Vargo away, we could follow him until we knew where he was taking Vargo. After the botched attempt that we had the other day during the high-speed chase, I wasn't too keen to try the same sort of thing again. "Here's your chance," I said to Shannon, nodding my head towards the rifle hidden underneath my jacket. "You should be able to make that shot without hurting Vargo." "A bullet in the head is too easy," Shannon said, not making a move towards the rifle. "After Beltran gets what he wants." She did not finish her thought. "Torturing him won't bring you peace," I said, as I thought of bringing up the rifle and looking through the scope at Martinez. He was a heartbeat away. The image of Shannon going to town on Martinez surfaced in my mind, and I could not shake it. That would not be good for her. "I could do this for you," I said. "Martinez's finger is on the trigger. You will kill Vargo, too. Honestly, do I have to do all the thinking for you?" Her voice was cold. If I'm not at the top of my game, I said, tell that to my ex. She picked a great time to dump me. Sure, Shannon muttered, throw that in my face. We sat in silence watching Martinez walk forward. He was taking his time. What was his game? Did he want Diagon security to find him? Smile, Cherry said over the radio. We're on camera. Whatever thought I might have had of intervening disappeared when I looked up and saw a helicopter with Channel 9 blazoned across the side. Martinez must have tipped off the media. His actions were beginning to make more sense. The police would not be far behind. We had been lucky so far that none of our recent shenanigans had ended up on a video posted to the internet, and I did not want to press our luck. The best the police had of us from the other day were a few blurry photographs and sketches that could have been anybody. Several armed men approached Martinez, and based on his reaction, I could tell they were with him. They escorted Martinez and Vargo to a Suburban waiting on the street just ahead of where Cherry and Tom's Charger was parked. The Whirlybird had shown up just in time to record footage of Martinez loading Vargo into their vehicle and driving off. Several of his men moved toward a different car. I could not tell the make or model from my vantage point. Shannon started our car. We should let them go, I said. We don't want to be on TV. Shannon did not respond as she put the car in gear and moved forward. Martinez's men retrieved rifles from their car. At first, I thought they were going to target us, but then they began firing at the Diagon security force. I had to double-check to make sure I was not seeing things. Martinez had managed to escape with Vargo right under their nose. And now he was going to call attention to what he had done? He must want a media circus. Cherry and Tom were in front of us, and the Suburban was several cars ahead of them. I picked up the radio and was about to coordinate a strategy for following Martinez that would keep us from getting noticed when the back doors of the Suburban opened and men began firing our way. I could not tell if they had been lashed to the inside of the vehicle to keep from falling out, but something had to be keeping them on their feet. Unfortunately, the height advantage of their vehicle gave them the ability to target us even though we were not directly behind them. Flashes from their gunfire illuminated the inside of their vehicle, as bullets riddled Cherry and Tom's car as well. Grabbing my pistol, I rolled down my window and opened fire, taking care to brace myself. I hated shooting from a moving vehicle. Watch out, Shannon screamed. I pulled back into the car as Shannon shot past Cherry and Tom. What was she doing? We needed to fall back, or we were going to get ripped to shreds. More bullets ripped through our windshield, and shards of safety glass went flying into my face. I heaved a sigh of relief a few seconds later as we slid to a halt. Our engine was smoking, and I was uncertain if she braked or the car had stopped working. I emptied my magazine into the disappearing Suburban, but it did not slow them down. Switching to my rifle, I sprung out of the car and brought it up. My shots went wild, and they soon took a corner and were gone. I stood as Shannon stumbled out of the car. You okay? I asked. She did not appear to hear me, so I touched her lightly on the shoulder. Shannon turned, pistol aimed at me. Don't touch me! I stepped back. You okay? There was some bruising on her face that had not been there before. Don't ever touch me again, she said. I won't. Shannon lowered the pistol, but her anger did not fade. A Charger lurched to a stop, and Cherry spoke through a broken window. Need a lift? I was surprised that their car was still moving. The windshield was cracked in half a dozen places. How were they both still alive? Between our car and theirs, at least one of us should have been hit. I did not have time to think it through now, but I became suspicious. Had Martinez been trying to avoid harming us? Trouble, Shannon said as the helicopter stopped to hover above us. That was when the car died. Cherry turned the ignition, but it would not turn over. By the looks of things, it would never move again. I avoided looking up at the chopper, hoping that they weren't going to be able to catch my face on camera. We'd be running separate directions now. Hopefully it would chase after Martinez and leave us alone. Before any of us had a chance to make a break for it, a black Suburban pulled up, and Beltran rolled down the window of the passenger side. In flames as usual, Beltran yelled. Get in. We all piled into the vehicle. Dolores was behind the wheel. Her knuckles were turning white from gripping the steering wheel too hard, and her face was contorted. She was screaming for us to hurry. Once the doors were shut, she slammed on the gas and took off. A few minutes later, when we had determined that the news crew in the helicopter was not following us, There was a collective sigh of relief. Dolores looked more relieved than the rest of us. "Was this another test?" I asked, barely able to hide the shaking in my voice. It was all I could do at the moment to keep from yelling. A thought had occurred to me, an explanation for why Martinez's men had been taking special care to ensure that we did not get hurt in the firefight. What if this was the final test? Martinez could still be working for Beltran, and everything he'd been doing could have been for that purpose. Whether he caught my deeper meaning or not, Beltran did not answer my question. Perhaps he'd picked up on the venom I'd been hoping to hide. "No more excuses," Beltran said from up front. "Martinez has probably escaped Diagon and the police by now, but I think we found his base of operation." He looked back at the four of us. "We're going in after him. Can we try not to mess this one up?" "Maybe we would be doing a better job," Cherry snapped, "if you told us what was going on more often." "Are we going to have backup from the other agencies?" Tom asked. The other Black Brick teams were out of the city on an assignment, which was probably the reason why Dolores had been recruited for field work. I watched Beltran closely for his reaction. He'd always talked about how he was coordinating our activities with the FBI or local law enforcement, but I'd never seen anything firsthand to indicate such things ever happened. "No," he said. "Martinez is our problem. We will take care of him ourselves." For a brief second, a look of annoyance had crossed Beltran's face, and I saw him looking from Tom to Cherry to me. I could not tell if he was suspicious that we were asking questions that could blow the lid off a dangerous secret, or if he was just getting tired of us constantly challenging his authority. Whatever it was gone as quick as it came. There were not any other cracks in that cold, hard demeanor of his. That's it for this week. I hope you have enjoyed the show. Tune in next week for another installment of the Dan Decker Books Podcast. One last thing before you go. Sign up for my newsletter at dandeckerbooks.com, and you will receive a free ebook. The text, audio, and music for this show are all copyrighted by Dan Decker. All rights reserved. This podcast is published by Xander Revolutions LLC.